that became a big issue. Then if I'm talking about health establishments, it means we're also involving them. We are all not the standard. We are created somewhere, not through the human health. Thank you.
Thank you. Kelly, we're going to give over to you to ask you that. I think, remember, this is what I tried to make a law here. And nobody can ever say that he or she does. So, in our humble way of doing things, we request everybody to make their own suggestions and correct us where we are wrong. Because this is something that is going to stay for decades, if not until eternity. So we don't want to make it wrong. We've got to make it with all the integrity, the honesty, the humility. So that everybody wants to say something, it's for our people. So everybody must feel free to raise their hand and correct us if we're doing something wrong. So I'll ask Gary, welcome members. I didn't want you to introduce yourself because it's just the department, and I think all of you from the opposing sides, you know each other. Unless DG, your conclusion that you think that they are new, they might not be known. And I don't think on our side there are new people. We still have the same old people, so we don't have to make any introductions. Can you see that there are some people who want to introduce themselves, but let's give them a chance. Okay, do you want to pass to the other person? Were you raising your hand? Oh, you're calling with Violet? Why is she not coming to you? Why don't you go to her? You're wondering that side.
No, why doesn't he come to his
head? I'm not sure who's more important. Is it the tata or the mama? Who's
the
more
mama.
Important? Or is that a tata? Is a queen? Is a queen? Honorable Dadla, I saw you raising your hand. Okay, let's give over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, members. Good morning, members of the department. I think, as the Chairperson said, there are two critical issues that need to be decided by the committee in conjunction with the department. First of all, would be the independence of the Office of Outstanding Compliance and the Ombudsman, which we'll deal with shortly. And then also the overlap between the standards of the laboratories and other health establishments. That can be dealt with in two ways, but let me first just say to the members that I've been trying to get hold of the assessing body at the DTI, which assesses the laboratories, and it's quite particularly difficult because it's actually outsourced, not part of the DTI. And I've eventually tracked down the person, so I've given the number to Buyokazi, and then we'll try and get the DTI here to say exactly how the standards overlap between laboratories and hospitals, clinics, etc. Because I think it's important that the members understand to what extent there is an overlap and is it good to exclude. Once we then find out exactly how it overlaps, if any, we can then include a provision in the bill to exclude specific laboratories, because if we start tampering with the definition in the main bill, in the Principal Act, there are sections in the Principal Act which will then not apply to laboratories anymore, which is something that we might not want. So I think we should work then rather, once we find out how the overlap happens, we then put an exclusion in the bill. I can see the department nodding, so I think they're agreeing. So I've given the number to Boyokazi, we will get hold of them as soon as possible, and get the authority there to come and say this is how it overlaps. Then in terms of the independence of the Office of the Health Standards Compliance and the Ombudsman, it was particularly difficult to analyze this, and I'm still busy finalizing the opinion, so I'm speaking for my notes, and I will then hand out the opinion tomorrow to the members so they can have they can then apply their minds to the legal opinion, the legal issues contained in that. But speaking from my notes now, there are no criteria when it comes to the independence of any particular body. In no law is it crystallized to say you need to look at this, that, and the other. However, if one looks at constitutional law jurisprudence or constitutional court jurisprudence, in particular, there's a vast array of information or sort of loose criteria that the courts do look at. And if one applies then the criteria applied in Glenis, that was President of the Republic of South Africa, there were specific examples that the majority judgment and the minority judgment looked at. But first of all, you have to look at the context of the body that you are analyzing. So we have to look at the Office of the Health, of Health Standards Compliance, as well as the Ombudsman, and say to what extent or what are the proposed powers of these bodies. If one looks at Section 70 or Clause 79, Capital A of the Bill, it has considerable powers to actually advise the minister to shut down hospitals, to apply to advise the minister on those norms and standards. So it has considerable powers for both private and public institutions. But then we also have to look at the fact that the minister is responsible for norms and standards. So he has a particular interest in applying those criteria to different health institutions. So that would also be something that the committee would have to look at. It is understandable then that the minister would want to exercise a certain degree of control over health institutions. That's not uncommon. What the Constitutional Court did say in applying those criteria, well, the various criteria which I'll discuss in further, is to what extent or what degree does the structure and the form, which is the second criteria, that is the structure and the form of the entity, which is the Office of the Health Standards Compliance and the Ombudsman, does that structure support independence from the minister? And there you have to look at various other criteria, which is you have to look at the appointment and removal of the head of the public entity. In this case, it would be the CEO. And the CEO, one of the critical issues here is that the CEO is appointed by the minister. He or she can also be then fired by the minister. He or she signs a performance agreement with the minister, and that is then amended and changed according to the individual needs and requirements. The appointment of the staff of the entity and the security of tenure of the head of that entity. So these are the things that the committee would need to look at, on which the Constitutional Court also looked at, particularly in the Glenis case. Those are the issues that the committee will then have to consider and say, is this what we want? Is this desirable? And I know that in the public hearings, the independence of this body was a particular issue for the private institutions. So that would be just something that the committee would have to look at. And one of the areas would be Clause 79, Capital A, in the bill, because that sets up the powers, the appointment procedures of the CEO. In that case, it's just one person. And in speaking broadly with various other legal advisors, one of the suggestions that came out, I spoke to the chairperson as well, one of the suggestions that came out was to include a board as opposed to just the CEO. So if in the deliberations with the department, if they find desirable with the minister as well, we can then sit together, the different legal advisors can sit together and we can draft and include a clause that can then be included in the amendment bill to say, we provide for a board of the Office of Health Standards Compliance. It does this, etc. We can then discuss the powers of that board. And also, it might also assist in terms of review and appeal procedures when it comes to the licenses and the norms and standards that need to apply by the Office of Health Standards Compliance. So that might also be something that the committee would want to look at. Then the final criteria that the Constitutional Court looked at was public perception. So not only must it be independent, but it must be perceived to be independent from the minister. So that is that's the last criteria that the Constitutional Court looked at, whether it applied the issue of, check the issue of the independence of public entities. And in this case, there's a clear public perception that as the bill is now, there's not sufficient independence from the minister in applying those norms and standards. So it is up to the committee then to decide on the basis of what I've described now, and then tomorrow when I hand out the finalized legal opinion, what in their deliberations, what is the best for the Office of the Health Standards Compliance? Is it better for an individual person? Do we then change how that person is appointed, and what happens with the performance management system with the minister and the person who's appointed? Or do we want the board? How do we proceed if we want the board? we can then sit together and we can draft the clause to say this is how we want the board to operate, this is what we need to do. Thank you, Chair. If there's any questions, for the members of our
staff. Thank you. Thank you very much. We will definitely probably ask you any questions of clarity if members want to. Whether government of the people, by the people, for the people. And it becomes very important that whatever we do must be, it must be perceived as if it's something that is actually coming from the people, and we are representing the general public as members of parliament. So members, that is the legal advice, and he has promised that he's going to give us a legal document so that we can have a look at it and scrutinize it. But that's I'm a little bit worried that you will not be educated are sitting together. I thought you were in the opposing area. So you should sit together, you should sit on the other side. Otherwise, we are going to derail us. We don't know what language are you going to use to follow that. I see Honorable Douglas, you should be sitting this way rather than sitting on the way. But no, you're okay, Honorable Douglas. Members, that is the. Before we give over to the department, just to have their own sort of summary of how they see these things. Are there any clarities that you would need from UKB, knowing that tomorrow is going to give us a document that was going to be rejected? Are there any other things that you didn't understand well in the few things that he mentioned? By the way, it's not in the. He was just commenting generally on the things that have been mentioned. So if there are any clarities, but if we don't have any clarities that we need to do, we can go in and ask the department just to make a few comments before we go on. There are certain suggestions that, okay, they actually made. One of them, in this independence, whether is it independent or not independent, the Office of Standards, especially the Chief Executive and the Ombudsman, he's making a very good point that probably if we have something like a board, that probably would actually create that impression that it's independent from the department. As he's saying that the minister is the one who's supposed to set the standards for this institution, and at the same time it becomes him who so these are some of the very important things. So remember, if there are any clarity that you want, you can get that. I was joking, it's in the different you know, there's a term that we used to say when we were young. But the white people, during that apartheid, you know, they want you to live a better life. So if you're an African, you used not to have toys. It was only the white kids that had toys. So, you know, we used to play within each other, pulling each other because we didn't have toys. So I think he's born of a white family. He doesn't really understand jokes. No, I'm joking. Okay, members. If there's nothing, members, we don't have to go into. Maybe then we can go into the department and ask UDG to help us. Just give us, because they've been there with us, just give us the summary of how they felt as we're seeing the stakeholders.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you for inviting us to this meeting. Let me start by saying that yes, we've had an opportunity to not only listen to the inputs, but also we've gone through some of the comments that have been made. And I'd just like to reflect on a few and maybe also respond to the inputs that you just had. One, Chair, is that we also appreciate if you can have access to the comments made by the environmental law practitioners. And I would like to start with that particular comment. I'm not sure what is it that they've referred to in the bill, but I think it's a matter of significance that Cabinet has just discussed, which perhaps maybe the committee at some stage should have to consider. And that relates to the functions that are prescribed in the Act relative to the environmental health practitioners. The Act does not necessarily make reference to them as environmental health practitioners, but we probably have to look at what is it in their submission. As you may be aware, Chair, we've had an issue with the with the yellow fever and the role of court health officers, which is internationally a national competence. So cabinet has actually directed the minister to come back to parliament to address that particular problem. I thought I should raise it. I know that it's not our role as the department to raise it, but it's an important issue. And I must say that since I've come back from Geneva, it was also a very serious issue that was raised. It's a public health issue. And it was tabled formally, there's a resolution that has been passed, and South Africa also made a statement. Because we're a country that is normally a host of major events, and we're also signatory to these international health regulations, we've got that obligation to comply. And all other state parties have to comply as prescribed in the international health regulations. I thought I should make that statement, but it's probably a process that the minister will have to follow up on with the committee, because I don't know what the process will be. So relative to the comments that have been made, but particularly by most of the stakeholders, yes, indeed, our observations were similar to those made by Gary, but I think there are two other comments that I would like to refer to that have not been highlighted. And the one was about definition, which I would like to refer to, because as a principle there is some issues of consent that I would like to bring to your attention. The second is about accreditation, to say that the Act is silent on accreditation. So I would like to comment on those in addition to the other comments that I'm going to make. The first chair, with regard to independence, yes, indeed, it was our observation that a lot of comments were with regard to independence. But I also think we probably need to look at independence in context and maybe ask the question, independence from what and independence from whom? And as a principle, our understanding is that the independence must always refer to the manner in which the board arrives at its decision. And that it must not be subject to influence, pressure, whether commercial, public, or otherwise. And I think it is in that context that we have to interpret, because on one hand, it can't be sort of advocated that independence and independence is just limited to the minister, but independence is not, it does not apply when it relates to commercial interest, for instance, nor public pressure. I'd like to use an example. I mean, if members of the public agree that a particular facility has not been given a particular status because it does not comply. So the Office of Health Standard Compliance must objectively come up with a determination of its decision. It must not decide accordingly because the public has pressure on it to act in a particular way. And I think the same will apply with regard to commercial pressure and equally from a political pressure. So we need to look at independence broadly, but we also have to recognize that there's no organ of state that is completely independent. As far as we know, organs of state are created by their very nature, are created by government. So when we talk independence, we have to be explicit. What do we mean? And our understanding was that it is in the manner in which this body will arrive at its decision, that there must not be influence, it must be based on facts, and also consider public health. So this is our comment. So, the overlap, yes, we recognize that the manner in which the draft was prepared might have created the consensus, and it might lack clarity, and perhaps we need more clarity. And I would like to specifically refer to the laboratory. I do not think that it is the intention of this law to create a mechanism of regulating laboratories. specifically because we do have an act, even though it was an act that was created to create a national health laboratory service as a service. If at all perhaps we want to refer to standards, we may want to see whether we could create standards within that law instead of writing them in this particular law. It may be an option, but I'm just raising it. But we do agree that if you look at the health establishment, this is a facility where people are in direct contact with them. And I think it is the protection of members of the party that is paramount. And in the manner in which we render service, in the manner in which the services are designed, in the manner in which our health professionals talk and interact with the members of the public, in the manner in which they access those services. I think this is how we should view this. And based on that, if you look at the lab, the members of the public do not walk into a lab and interact with the lab. We get the result. But what we were saying is that we have to perhaps see whether what we want to say with regard to the regulation of the labs and the compliance of the labs with specific standards that we set should be in relation to how those services affect the public in our own establishment and make that provision in our establishment. But we should not write it in such a way that there's a complete exclusion. But exclusion would be in as far as we can relate with what is in the National Health Laboratory Service. Because in essence, we have to go to that act. Look at how that specific act relates to this one. Now, specifically because we've got two services when it comes to laboratories. There are laboratories that are run privately, and the labs that are created specifically in terms of the National Health Laboratory Service. So we would have to go back and see whether, in terms of what is in that act, are there any specific provisions that can be relied on? Because I don't think there's anything wrong in having laboratories comply with modern standards. Now, in as far as standards is concerned, we have to also be very careful because the South African National Laboratory Setting Body is not confined to a lab that render pathology services. It is also a lab that ensures that there's compliance with good laboratory practice. Now, good laboratory practice relates to instances where you conduct preclinical studies, for instance, in a laboratory with mice and rats. And I don't think it's the intention of this law to regulate that environment where people are doing research in a laboratory. Neither is it our intention to, because if it's read broadly like that, it means we want to regulate even the chemistry labs and so on. So we have to be careful to be very specific about it. We have to go back to the intention, not to the objective. The objective is to protect the public, but ensure that whatever service is rendered in terms of those establishments is such that it cannot expose them to harm and, you know, it can meet objectives of ensuring that they can have a long and healthy life. So with regard to laboratories, I think it's clear that this can be resolved. Now, as of other statutory bodies, and particularly the professional statutory bodies, the professional statutory bodies have a mandate to regulate professionals, but in their function, they also have to look at the environment within which those professional services are rendered. And I'd like to start with the Health Professions Council. Chair, as of today, any general practitioner in this country can open a practice anywhere, but there is no standard to say how that practice should look like. It can be a small garage, it can be a house, it can be a room, it can be an office, but there are deficiencies with regard to the Health Professions Council and the manner in which they regulated the practice of the general practitioner. So the question that we probably have to ask ourselves is whether the Health Professions Council should have a mechanism by which they set standards on how a general practitioner's room should look like and what kind of place should be rendered. Because as it is now, there is no provision, and it's an unregulated environment. And this is contrary to pharmacy. Any pharmacy is prescribed in terms of size, what is kept, the square kilometer, and so on. I mean, there are very specific provisions of the actual facility and how it should be regulated. So it's a second area. But there's a third area, and this relates to training. What statutory bodies prescribe facilities and the requirements that should be complied with in as far as the training of professionals are concerned? But all of them relate to a professional, to an individual, a person, their practice, their scope of practice, and their conduct. But not an establishment that is supposed to provide public service to a massive number of people. That specific provision would be for an individual professional. For instance, if it's the Health Professions Council, it would be about a member of that profession in terms of those boards that have been established. If it's a nurse, it would be in terms of the nursing act and the pharmacy and so on. Dental practitioners and dentists, it will also be with regard to that. But it's the professional within the context of that scope of practice. But it won't say what the environment should be generally. It won't say that it should be clean and there must be the control of infection and the attitude of the workers in that environment should be in a particular way. And neither does it put a comprehensive approach in the manner in which we look at clinical governance. Because we have to look at this in a comprehensive manner. So what we are suggesting here, particularly with regard to the health profession related statutory functions, was that we have to identify those areas of overlap in as far as they relate to norms and standards. And then perhaps agree in principle that those should, the Office of Health Standards Compliance should, can, because it's provided for in law, rely on those decisions or cross-reference those or request reports from those institutions. We approached from that context and we wanted to share that with you. The next point, Chair, is about the OMBAS person. We recognize that perhaps there might be an area where there could be improvements, and again, linked to the earlier version of independence. Now, our view was that the OMBAS person would play a significant role, but the question is how would the OMBAS person relate to the office itself? And it's what has repeatedly come up as an area of concern to see the OMBAS person reporting line can obviously not be true to the CEO, because any person needs complaints from the establishment or against the decisions of the CEO that we've raised complaints and there's not been a response, may not get an appropriate response. And our comment was that it could make more sense if the response, the OMBAS person could present the report to the minister, and the minister must make those available to Parliament, to the Parliament Committee, so that they can be accessed. That is the point that you wanted to raise. Chair, the last one is the comment about the two other comments I had. The first is about the board, the proposal of the board. We read what was proposed, and our observation was that it was almost like the suggestion was that we should have the audit of health standards compliance be retrieved by a board. And we thought that perhaps it may not be an approach. Instead, you could have a board as a governance structure. But we have to decide whether it should be a technical board or an administrative board. But the principle of a board, we do not have problems with. We still think that we have to decide whether it should be technical or administrative, with just purely judiciary, a judiciary role. And we were thinking that it would make more sense if it has a technical oversight role. The last one, Chair, is the proposal to have a definition of norms and standards. When we read that comment, our concern was that it made reference to a section of the Act, section 92 sub U and V, which has been subject to legal attention. Actually, it's a section that deals with the reference price list. And we're actually surprised because it's a provision that no longer exists because it has been struck off in a court of law. So I wasn't sure why it was referred to. But we thought that we could rely on the ordinary definition of the word norm and standard as internationally applicable in various settings, and we are just worried that if we confine ourselves to a specific definition, it may restrict our ability to power them. The last one, Chair, is about accreditation. the vision. If you read the green paper, Chair, was that we would have the Office of Standard Compliance issue a compliance certificate. That says, yes, we comply with this standard. But for anyone to render services in terms of national health insurance, they would have to be accredited. So there's a distinction that we made between a compliance with standards for which someone get a certificate to say yes, we comply with a certain period of validity, and also accreditation that says yes, meaning it's not everybody who will be accredited because there will be other considerations. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Didi. I remember that is the comments, those are the comments from the department, and there are certain things that she has tried to explain, and I'm sure some of the people are going to need some clarity in those, so that we are on the same understanding. I'm not going to comment, I'm going to leave it to you. There are two worrying things. One of them is that we do have members who are sitting on many committees, but I'm told that if there's a bill that is in front of the committee, that committee should be privatized. So I suggest that probably even those that are not here, we should make sure that we inform them that when we're going to be, we should privatize the committee that is going to be. The second one, which is something that I'm going to confirm later, is that it seems as if it has not been approved that we should meet late today, but it's something that there's a few things that UDG has mentioned which we definitely need to consider, and we need to be clear of what she said so that if we consider them, we are not wishy-washy, we are very clear of what we are talking about. I'm not going to go through all of them, but we can mention them as we deliberate. So, okay, members, are there any questions of clarity from what we did in the time?
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks the department for the presentation. Maybe I should start on what you said last. I would even suggest, Chair, that if you are having this type of meeting, because the chairs and the whips do have a platform to it, it should be announced in those, because really it poses problems for us, whereby you have been torn in between. Like today is COPTA meeting for me, and it was like a problem to be understanding why I shouldn't come. Can it be done that? Can I be clarified around the accreditation? When you talk about accreditation, which I even heard during the presentation, the last presentation, I wanted to know, in terms of a clinic or a hospital, whereby you find that in a clinic, you find that there is accreditation by another body like the South African Nursing Council, whereby if you want to, I want to form, I'm a primary health care nurse, and I do have qualification, I want to open a clinic, I should be accredited. Now, I want to know the difference. Like if, when we talk about prevention to mother, from mother to child, the clinic should be accredited. Then initially when, what we knew, because when you got that program, it is a quality improving program. And I would even want to understand that this bill to talk is really relying mostly on the quality. Now, how are they going to work? Because I have to be accredited by the South African Medical Council. I should be accredited by the, whatever. Can I be explained around the accreditation so that I shouldn't like confuse them? Thank you, Chair.
Any other question, member, or everything? Okay, no, thank
you. Thank you, Chair. I think I have only one question. Only suggestion about independence and so on. For what and for whom? So you said that that needs interpretation. And then you said I said that, but not to be subject to influence. Now, what I want to, if you say that we are protected, the protection of members of or members of the public is paramount. Therefore, how are we not in the public not supposed to influence? I don't know how to call, I don't know how I'm putting it right. What I'm trying to say, if committees ask me to something, and then they want to influence, and then now I just want to check how does it work today?
Thank you, Mark. There's something that we have said, is seeing no hand from the members about DTI calling them, and it has got to do with the number of the members. I understand what you are saying, but I want you to tie it up with calling that structure from DTI to come and explain, because one understands what you're saying, that when we're talking about this Office of Standards, it's unlike when I talk about an HIV result, which might be wrong, might be right. There's another standard that you're going to look at. This one is not looking at that, whether it's that. Coming back to the community thing, I think Makanya has put it right about the community, but maybe you should comment. You know, there's sometimes a misunderstanding of democracy. So some people, for them, democracy, everything must come towards me. I must have no responsibility. And as a result, it becomes disaster. And sometimes you want to do something not knowing what is it all about. I'll make an example where not having well, what do you call it, like a hospice where you could keep those that are terminally ill. Not having it in my place, but people are going to say, in your normal hospital where you admit emergencies, someone is going to come and say, no, no, they are discharging my father, though my father is still hemiplegic, he can't walk. Yet the diagnosis has been made and everything has been done, but they still want that person to stay in hospital, irrespective of the fact that what needed to be done in that hospital has been done. And the community starts to enjoy that, look, you are discharging our people while they are still sick. Yet everything has been done. It's only that they don't know how far to stay. I think I'm piggybacking on that. So if you could explain. Okay, okay.
Thank you, Chair. Let me start with the first point. We're making reference specifically to the fact that we do not believe that the Office of Health Standard Compliance should accredit. This is our first point that we're making. They should not do any accreditation. They should issue a certificate of compliance. They say you comply with standards. And based on that, Chair, we wanted to refer you to a specific section of the Act which has not been amended, but which has constitutional problems, and maybe there is no way to look at it. It's the one on certificate of need. We sought legal opinion on certificate of need. It has serious constitutional problems. And it would make far more sense, instead of issuing a certificate of need, to rather issue a certificate of compliance with standards. And that's the approach we're suggesting. And we're saying that you can't provide for accreditation, not in this provision. So it will take care of these problems of accreditation, because your statutory bodies must always accredit their individual professionals to say they are competent to do certain things within their scope of practice. I don't think it is the intention of the Office of Health Standard Compliance to say a nurse, for instance, is competent to render a service, a professional statutory counsel role and function. And hence we're suggesting that you can't, but you can rather have the Office of Health Standard Compliance issue a certificate if they say to comply, but with a certain period of validity. The one on public influence, Chair, I want to cite an example of and perhaps to recall what has happened recently. On the 1st of March, the National Health Act came into force in its entirety, except for this section on certificate of need. And there's a specific provision that allows for the minister to designate hospitals and come up with different categories. And one determines the norms and also standards with regard to the number of beds, for instance, for a particular catchment population. It says a hospital of 50 beds cannot be called a tertiary hospital. It's a district hospital. So in the event members of the public from a particular community say that we want you to call tertiary, even though the norm is that 50 bed hospital is a district, we have to rather go on an education campaign to the public, not change it because the public demands that it must be called a tertiary hospital, even though it's a 50 bed hospital. Meaning, consistent with what you're saying, Chair, any process like this goes with an education program for the community so that they understand it. And it also requires of us to consult communities and so on. Now, some of the normative work and the standards that we come up with are informed by international norms. And some of the international norms are what South Africa complies with internationally. It's not because we're doing it as a country uniquely. So it is for that reason that where I was referring specifically to the public, it is in those instances where we have to apply norms, but because public wishes may not be consistent with the norms, but you can't just leave it to the technical work, we still need to engage the communities and comply with them. What we are suggesting is that you can't then get the Office of Health Standard Compliance change just to accommodate the public. Neither can you make a change because there's commercial pressure or other types of pressure. We're just in this in that context. Chair, with regard to standards, what we are suggesting is that there are already norms and standards for laboratories, like I said. But what we are saying, if you look at the clinical governance, for instance, we have to use the clinical governance standards. And clinical governance standards cannot be written into law. They are what you describe as a soft law, because they will come in the form of guidelines that you revise on an ongoing basis. And we would suggest that you can always refer to the standards lab guidelines specifically. And I wouldn't have a problem if we refer to them and look at them in detail. But as far as how the establishment requires those services, I think is what is important. For instance, Chair, if it takes 2 weeks for lab results to be made available, for instance, it's a standard. You can set a standard where we say results from a lab must be available, the turnaround time, for instance. But remember, the onus lies on the service itself. And this is why we have to look at the service and the National Health Laboratory Service Act. There is already an act. But if we write certain provisions in this law, it might be that they are already in the other law. We just have to cross-reference so that we don't create confusion. The standards, like I said, it's much broader. It also regulates laboratories, quality control laboratories where medicines are made. So pharmaceuticals. Quality control laboratories, they determine the standards for good laboratory practice. In some instances, good clinical practice. Final product release specifications that are determined for products where tests are made, quality control tests are made for products before they are released to the market. They also determine those standards and so on. So I thought it would actually be expanding the provisions of the act way beyond what is intended. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Titi. I don't think there are any questions of clarity, Member. So if not, I just wanted to suggest that if we could, I'm not sure whether there's tea or no tea, but there should be tea, so that we can have a 10-minute break. And then we converge again. Just a 10-minute break.
Okay.
South African Institute
environmental health, which is something that is very important for us. And there's another document that came from the patient first, which we need to look at. So all those documents are not here with us. And one wonders whether can we go on and look at certain things, but most of the things that are quotations are actually towards the back of the thing. So I think we need to decide what do we do. And it has been confirmed that this afternoon we're not going to be able to meet. The reason being that probably Parliament is going to take too long today. So it's going to be difficult for us to meet later today. But definitely tomorrow we're going to meet until maybe even after the sitting we're still going to meet. For those who happen to have study groups, after Parliament, there's been a suggestion that we're not going to have a study group. Those who have started, we're not going to have it. And even though there's a change that we're still not going to meet in the evening, still there's not going to be a study group because it's too short a notice. So we won't have it. There won't be a study group for those who have study groups today. Members, I think one of the things that needs to be built into this is the trust of the community. They must have a trust on what we're doing, so that even if we give suggestions or we tell them that this is not right, they must trust us that we've done something good. But going forward, I would like to just to clarify that part of all, because we mentioned something about A1, and you came up with something that says many types of board. Now, if you could clarify the member specifically on those boards, so that when they decide on the board, which I think even yourself, you agree that there should be a board, but so that you could understand what type of a board that is. If you could just clarify us on that, and then we're going to move with the meeting. That's clarity.
Thank you, Chair.
But out of what you have said, there is something that I want to ask you about. So I don't know whether I should wait until later or.
No, go on.
Okay. Chairperson, around the legal department that you said the document is coming, are they going to accompany the document? Because, you know, my little experience is that when a parent gives you a document, you read it without knowing the reason behind, or the reason behind. It might be just a document, but if you have a person who's presenting so that we ask questions about why and how, then that might help us all give us more information, not just the document. And then number two, Chairperson, we have already made arrangements that we are going to meet at 9 o'clock. The sitting, I think, is going to end up at 6. Why can't we proceed? Because the SMS will come to 9 o'clock.
Okay, thanks, Chris. On the first one, Chris, the document that is going to be coming is going to be coming from our legal advisor,
mm-hmm.
not the legal advisors of the department. We don't want to know this at all. So it's going to be coming, and they are always with us. They are always with us. So they'll be coming with the document and they'll explain what is actually going on. On the other one, when I'm sure you're talking about the study group. We were supposed to sit as a portfolio committee looking at the bill after the sitting in Parliament. But it has come from the chair of chairs that we can't have we can't have a portfolio committee meeting after the sitting. Because they think that it's going to take too long, and maybe there are other logistical problems that have made them to make that decision. I won't talk to you because I got this message as I'm sitting here. So I think whatever that we could organize is going to fall flat. I'm not sure what arrangements have you made. Maybe we can try and change them. Or if there's nobody to take you out, we can try and organize somebody who's going to take you out this evening so that you while away. I think there are a few people here from the department. There's more males in the department than females. So we can organize a few of the men. The age might not be the same, but the age is not a problem.
danger because of that. So what you could well, fortunately, Grace, there's this thing in front of you. You could start choosing. can take you on this season from 9 o'clock. So you can start choosing. Just don't worry about the age. Age is nothing, it's just a number.
I thought maybe there's an agent demand for us to complete the business. That's what I'm asking. But the church says that it's not agent. I mean, as a committee, as a committee.
Okay, you can press your things there. Yeah, talk to you.
No, what I'm trying to say is, Shepherd, to me, I thought this is agent. And the leader chair of church says it's not agent. We are really at the mercy of him. You are around venues and logistics. So, as a committee, we were ready to proceed. If he says no, then there's nothing that we can do.
That much as we wanted, because we want to finish this deal, but it seems as if it's something that is beyond us. So we just have to accept it that that's what they say. We don't know. I'm going to talk to him and find out what it is, because we want to finish this. But what I'm getting from the committee secretariat is that even if we don't meet tonight, we'll still finish the deal by Friday. We still, because the bill is not that much. And the contentious issues, they seem to have been cleared, especially those that are coming towards the end. So I think let's just accept it. But I'll talk to the chair of church and find out why, so that I could give a proper reason. Honourable Daddy.
Thanks. That changes what I was going to say a little if we're going to finish it in short time. But I just thought, if tomorrow's going to create the same problems and we're going to be blocked, to save the department hanging around and wasting their time, we do have all of next week to prioritise this problem, because it is a committee week.
Thank you very much, Honourable. Well, I think we have prioritized it and want to finish this so that this could move on. But it's only today, but definitely tomorrow. That one has been approved already. So tomorrow we're going to be sitting from the morning, we go to the city, and then we go back again and continue with the bill. So, and I'm told that we're going to be able to finish it by Friday. What I'll only request from you, members, is that we need to relook at the bill tonight. Make sure that we look at it so that when we come tomorrow, we just move knowing exactly where things are. Okay, Makai.
Thanks, just before we move. Yeah, I've actually been concerned about taking the decision of making a decision distribution, which has got sometimes the laws are conflicting. I want to actually check from the department if they ever have engagement with the National Association, Meeting Council. And also on the issue of, as you say, that the office, the manager of the Office of Health Standards Compliance, protect and promote the health and safety of users of health services. My question is on, yet it has made it clear, can you say it has spent the budget for the purposes? Because sometimes we don't know what is happening to those users. Only a few know those that are literate, and also those that have come across the judgment. What can you make it simpler so that even those who are interested in that have to know the laws? Because sometimes that's why we are saying they're toy, because they don't know what is happening. So they're just toy, they don't know that this is a law, you know, something to do that. Maybe how can we see that they are also on par? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. There are two things here. I think one of the things is that as a human being, you can go to a certain level and which you can't go beyond. That's why there has to be laws that this is right, whether it's wrong, but it's right, you could do up to that. And the second thing, Department, you must understand, all of us sitting here were representing the 50 million population of South Africa. And out of that 50 million population, some people are illiterate, some people are imbecile, some are children. that they can't talk for themselves. Some they can talk, some they're very local. We are representing all that. Now, when we are asking you questions, we are trying to behave like the illiterate, those who can't talk, those who are stupid, those who are clever. We are representing all that, the 50 million. So just take our questions. Don't see any question to be very stupid, any question to be more brilliant than the other. Just take our questions and respond to them. Thank you. The legal person just to say something before you come to me.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just have one concern regarding timing. I understand the committee would want to prioritize, but given our changes that we might want to affect in terms of the board that requires a bit of drafting, and I don't want it to be in a situation where there are mistakes and there are challenges in the constitutional order of High Court or whatever. So that should give us enough time to draft an effective amendment, and then the state law advisor would then also need to, together with myself, then draft the B list. And then, I mean, that's going to take some time. I just don't want to be in a situation where the ball isn't reflected on the ball or doesn't reflect what the committee would want. So we just need to bear in mind that those issues are also there. And then also another one that the DG then brought to my attention was the fact that the minister then wanted also one more amendment, but it's not a big one, and we can just affect it in the committee. There's just a small amendment in the principal act that the minister wants to bring in. It's just a deletion. So it's not a major big deal. The committee, the DG can just inform, I think she informed the committee already around that deletion of three words, which isn't a big deal.
On the first one, am I getting you correctly? Are you saying that if the changes in the board or the practices that are going to come, they might make you take longer to give us the document tomorrow?
Just to get the draft out, to get the a new amended bill out, because that needs to reflect the changes that the committee would want.
Can you give us a suggestion of time when probably we're due to finish?
If the committee can, then I think we decided basically just on the board, and so we'll just be drafting a few clauses, and then I'm not sure if I can meet with the state law advisor today, if while the members can go to the house and we can sort that out by this afternoon.
So by tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. The first point that was raised by the Chair about the board, we were saying that there are two types of board. One that has a fiduciary responsibility and with more oversight and that looks into administrative processes and so on. And the other board is more technical, and we were saying because this is going to take a lot of technical work, it would be advisable if the committee could consider rather a technical board. This is a board that would provide oversight with regard to decisions that are made with regard decisions that are made relative to the content in a standard and also how those standards are reviewed on an ongoing basis and how they are applied, and it would also help with ensuring that on an ongoing basis we could ensure that those institutions that subject to those standards are inspected, and that we ensure the competence of people who conduct those inspections and even the technical advisory committees that are established that are supposed to provide support to the CEO are also competent, and there's some normative work that's done that is consistent with what applies internationally. So that would sort of be a proposal, and
wouldn't be concerned about their competence. It also provides some form of government and provides support to the CDO so that these major decisions do not just rely on an individual, but at least we have an oversight group with some government.
That was just to clarify that part so that when we decide, we know what we're talking about. The bill is ours, it's no more belonging to the department, it belongs to us, so we are the ones who are going to make decisions. Okay, thank you very much.
So the second question regarding nursing councils, actually I would like to say that we've had a consultation with the statutory bodies, different statutory bodies, including the nursing council, and I would like Dr. Marshall to give a feedback of the outcome, and we are still going to have a more discussion with them. That's it.
Thank you very much. In fact, we do have a major meeting scheduled with all the statutory bodies in a week or two's time, so that the discussion can be more formalised. We've had some discussions around standards dating from over several years, and I think the DG has outlined very clearly that the difference between regulation of individuals and regulation of establishments. So I think that has been the ongoing discussion with the statutory bodies, is that their responsibility extends over the professional conduct of their members, whereas this body would be more proactive in that it would look at what are the situation in which their members practice. But we are, as I said, there will be a joint meeting with all the regulatory bodies shortly to deepen the discussions that we've had with them.
With regard to Batopili principles, yes, I think this will be the guiding principles that this office must comply with, but they should also espouse the principles that ensure that the public is protected from harm. And we raise that repeatedly because we do recognize that even though health establishments are supposed to be facilities where people seek care, in the provision of care, sometimes mistakes happen, problems arise, and we should promote those principles. So what we were suggesting is that perhaps we could also there must be an obligation on the part of the office that they consciously go out and inform the public about these standards, so that it's there and so that it's not just assumed, but they should have that responsibility of communicating so that the public will know what their expectations are and how those expectations are met.
Okay, thank you very much. Remember, there's a committee joint committees that are going to be going on an oversight. So I'm sure you'll be told to which one you are beginning to have. There's a meeting that is going to be on Thursday, on the 31st, where there will be discussions. And that meeting is set at 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Thursday. So I'm just mentioning that so that you must know. But there are letters that are coming to you so that you'll be getting about that. Remember, there are these documents that we have talked about. I take it that we have asked the clarity. There are these documents that we are talking about, which some of them we haven't read, some of them we are going to get tomorrow. But I don't think myself, I'm trying to lobby you so that we start looking at the thing. Because some of the things that are coming from those documents probably are going to come later with the thing. So we can start looking at the thing clause by clause. And then in certain areas where it's want to depend on this document, then we can leave it for tomorrow. I'm trying to lobby you so that we do it that way, but are there any other suggestions as to how we need to do it? I want to be democratic here. My home country have been very quiet. I'm sure it's because they've said to others, but I don't know why. Okay, are there any comments?
If we do that, going clause by clause, and we haven't read the document from the research unit yet, if the research unit could just point us on any particular clause where any of these comments may be relevant that we need to maybe quickly read through it, especially.
Thank you.
Chairperson, I was going to suggest that before we go to the bill, the researcher must go through this.
Yes.
Because I was trying to ask the researcher, why are we getting it just now? Because I opened my email, but I didn't see it. Because this could have been in our pigeonhole. Can we, before going to the bill, go through the researcher? Thank you. Because I think it is very important. It's unlike the other presentation. This, I think, is very important.
I'm understanding you well. You are seconding what one of the judges say in a nutshell. Okay. And the other part that you are asking is that you must fire the researcher.
Yeah.
Why was this not in our head? No, we'll apologize. He has apologized to why he got it. So I think we all agree that since the researcher is here and the document is here, though we haven't read it, we'll just give him a chance to go through the document and tell us about the document, and it's going to help us to guide us to certain areas. Okay, researcher, you're not fired.
Chairperson, my humblest apologies to the committee. The reason this document hasn't been submitted to the members is it's still being edited by the research unit, therefore it hasn't been distributed to members. My humblest apologies for that. Basically, what the document is a summary of the public participation comments that were made in March. And what I've tried to do is group the comments together in relation to specific clauses and also in relation to specific themes. This document is a draft, so it will be changed. Let me. Okay.
Is there something that you said? Do you have your document?
Okay, let me state that in the first block, which looks at the aims and objectives of the bill, most, if not all, of the comments were actually positive. This is not recorded here, but most have supported the bill. Not all. So, in the block, you would see that the laboratory medicine group, for example, has commented that monitoring should be included in the objects of the bill, and also that the OHSC should be similar to a Schedule 3 Public Finance Management Act entity. Okay. Moving on to the next comment, which should actually come later, but I'll deal with it now, is that there should be a progressive approach to enforcement. The bill speaks about closure, but the sanction should correspond to the offence. Thirdly, the comment was made that the issue was highlighted that the OHSC is adjudicative versus it being a commission, in that the point was that an adjudicative committee or body would settle matters judicially, whereas the commission does not have the power to settle the matter, it can only make recommendations. And this was highlighted by one of the participants. Okay. A lot of comments came in with regards to the autonomy and the independence of the OHSC. Okay. the comments were made that it should be a public entity with greater autonomy, which would promote public confidence. It would need a board for council for strategic matters with the CEO to handle day-to-day operations, and this would shield the minister from expensive litigation. The National Pathology Group said that the independence must be explicitly guaranteed and must not only be an advisory body to the minister. It also said that it should be accountable to Parliament and prevent potential erosion of independence. The question arises, who guards the guards? So the independence must be written into the law to prevent it from being subverted or influenced from outside. The HASA also concurred with that and spoke about the independence from political and external influences. The other two, you know, being a prime principle, it also spoke about neutrality and transparency. In the current bill, the OHSC will be established and key appointments will be made by and accountable to the minister, according to HASA. And therefore it says that the function of the OHSC will not be independent from the minister, and therefore not operate neutrally and in an unbiased manner. The lack of independence, according to HASA, might result in governance structures being ineffective due to conflict of interest. Also, it said that there might be a bias in that there would be more rigorous assessment of private sector institutions versus public sector institutions. Okay. The Laboratory Medicine Group also spoke about the body being an independent and fee retention body, such as SANAS or the Competition Commission. The Medicine Controls Council was given as an example of not to follow, because they don't retain the fees and that leads to complications. So they said don't follow the NQC model. SALDA concurred that it should be independent and it should be a Schedule 3 entity. The South African Medical Device Institute Industry Association also noted that the independence was important, preferably by a separate statute. It suggested that an independent national inspector carry out inspections, that the OHSC should report to Parliament directly. It also noted that the minister is not obliged to consult when determining norms and standards, and that the minister and department are also service providers and therefore should not have influence on setting the norms and standards. It further noted that or recommended that the Ombuds should be separate from the OHSC with its own separate office, and that it should be able to dispose of complaints without depending on the CEO or minister. Okay, carrying on to the next issue. The next significant issue was the concurrent jurisdiction. These were noted by a number of different people. Pure Health Consulting noted the concurrent jurisdiction was the Consumer Protection Act, the Pharmacists Act, and the Health Professionals Act. They suggested a coordinated approach where the office works with other government agencies to coordinate their actions and avoid duplication and reduce the regulatory burden of health establishments. They also suggested developing MOUs, Memorandums of Understanding, with the regulators, as well as information sharing principles. They noted the Health Professionals Council, the HPCSA, the South African Nursing Council, the Medicines Control Council, the Public Protector, South African Human Rights Council, and the AG. The LMG also reiterated the issue of preventing conflict and duplication with other acts. The Pharmaceutical Industry Association of South Africa, PIASA, also spoke about the possible overlap and duplication with the Medicines and Related Substances Act and called for the committee to avoid duplication and confusion. Okay. The next issue was a point raised about the grading of hospitals into various levels of risks. The committee commented that it was a good idea to grade hospitals in terms of risk. The suggestion by the Pure Health Consulting was that you have a graded system for hospitals, and high risk institutions are inspected annually, and lower risk institutions are covered within a 3-year cycle of inspection. In that way, resources are best used. The issue of may versus must was also put to the participant, and the participant concurred with the committee that the use of may might weaken the legislation. Okay, specifically dealing with clause 77.1, Salda, the question was asked about the independence of the OHSC as a juristic person. Can it be sued? Does this mean patients cannot sue the Minister of Health for what has been done to them? Salda could not answer the question directly, but it said that the OHSC is independent by default, but it is not spelled out. The structure, they said that the structure could be similar to the Medicines Control Council, but they highlighted the issue of not retaining fees. The Schedule 3 organization, Schedule 3 PFMA would be a better suggestion, according to them. Okay. Moving on to the issue of core standards. The NPG, National Pathology Group, noted that clinical governance refers to compliance with norms and treatment guidelines or protocols. These should be set by professionals working in the specific fields using the best specific scientific evidence. The clinical guidelines should be authorized under the Health Professions Act to diagnose and treat specific conditions. ASA concurred that the board does not define clearly and precisely the terms, norms and standards. They said that it was important to distinguish quality standards envisaged in the law from clinical pathways, which are already set up in clinical practice guidelines. The BOL should define norms and standards and any functions of the office under these norms and standards, such that it excludes any issues relating to rationing or affordability constraints of the healthcare system from the provisions of the OHSC. The mechanism for addressing issues of affordability and rationing should be provided by a separate authority to prevent any conflict of interest. It further said that setting of prices in the private health sector by the minister, according to a 2010 judgment, would be unlawful. The process that will be used to arrive at the norms and standards should be defined and documented, as these processes require significant expertise and collaboration and consist of detailed data collection and international benchmarking. They were concerned that the NHA bill does not provide any detail on how the process will be carried out. Okay, HASA also recommended a Board of Health Standards to be established with the responsibility to set norms and standards. They provided a quite detailed description of how that should be done. Okay, the National Pathology Groups on the issue of issuing of standards said that the board does not provide for process in terms of which standards will be issued. So they highlighted the issue of process. They said that there was no effective way for publication of standards, and they recommended that the board should allow the OHSC to issue standards as notices, similar to the HBCSA or the CMS. It also said that it should oblige the OHSC to publish all standards for public comment. At the clause 77.2, HASA suggested that into it should be inserted pursuant to the fulfillment of its powers and objectives by the office. I think that's contained in the submission. 77A, B, and C. This is just referring to HASA's submission, which outlines the establishment of a board. Further on clause 78, HASA said that there was insufficient clarity on what the norms and standards will be used for. It is unclear whether the OHSC will accredit and certify or serve as the licensing authority. This should be included in section 78 of the poll. Furthermore, the setting of standards would have to precede the operations of the OHSC and should be inclusive and widely accepted by relevant stakeholders. They suggested replacing, you know, in the clause minister with board. And you know, the rest of their commissions looks at those issues. The IMSA also proposed that the OHSC should have an advisory and policy-making expert committees to assist it. A question was raised on the issue of disposal of complaints by the committee, but it wasn't adequately dealt with or captured. On clause 79, the IMSA said that the wording allows for overlaps and possible conflict, multiple laws of equal standing with two different sets of requirements and enforcement. Yes, they agreed that regulations were needed, but areas of the bill were vague and needed to be further defined and clarified. Also, continuity of the CEO, amongst other issues, could lead to interpretative differences. Okay, clause 79E. SADA, this was speaking about implementing harmonization. Negotiation could build harmonization, was SADA's response. Standards should be set in the open forum with other regulatory bodies. There was a submission by Mr. Mbara on the delegation of powers and assignment of duties. He said that there are adequately skilled executive officers in the public health institutions, but they must be properly allocated. The IMSA says that only Section 79E refers to harmonization. It should be redone as laws of equal standing would mean the executive would not know which act supersedes the other. So it's the issue of harmonization. Section 79D5A, the issue was about the question was put to the participants on whether all reports should be made public, even reports on quality. The response from Pure Health Consulting was that publicizing reports while informing the Minister of Health, there is no provision for sanctioning by the Minister of Health, and they agreed that not each and every report in full should be made available. However, an executive summary and grading the problem that exists should be made public. Clause 79(1)(f), which talks to recommend quality assurance and management systems for the national health system to the minister for approval. The SELDA recognized this as a possibility for duplication amongst a number of participants, a possibility for duplication as quality assurance and quality management are already legislated for. NPG agreed. They said that certification should be changed to accreditation. They highlighted that SANAS was the existing accreditation structure in pathology. LMG noted that definitions of quality assurance, quality control, and total quality management are missing from the bill. They also highlighted that the bill should avoid duplication with existing systems. And that, you know, we should eliminate conflict with existing legislation and governing standards. ASCII also agreed that duplication of certification poses a challenge. They said that existing standards are quite robust and exemptions should be allowed. The South African Medical Device Industry Association, SAMED, noted that general statements such as the one quoted would have different meanings in different contexts, and that all the standards should be published in draft format prior to finalization so that people could address their concerns. On clause 81, the question was put on what was the concern about only waiting for the Minister of Health to intervene, and whether there was a possibility that the Minister could change something. Pure Health Consulting noted that clause 81A, 9 and 10 implies reports and recommendations go to the CEO, who may, emphasis on may, request intervention from the Minister of Health, a provincial MSC, or a member of local government council or member responsible for health. it is the CEO's choice or prerogative versus his or her obligation or responsibility to request ministerial intervention. Salda said that the ombud should make a decision. There is a danger of political issues might influence the decision otherwise. And they made reference to clause 81A and 88. It talks to recommendations, not a ruling. And recommendations, again, can be changed. It cited the UK system where the quality body is completely independent and rulings must be complied with within 30 days. On clause 82A1, the Hospital Associates OASA proposed an appeal board to allow health establishments the right to appeal or review a notice of non-compliance. And they suggested that it should consist of a retired judge or magistrate as the chairperson and two other persons with broad knowledge of the healthcare industry. On clause 82A, non-compliance with prescribed norms and standards, Salda said that the legislative provisions do not support independence and regulations to be mandated by clause 82A on this aspect. On the issue of the ombud, the HASA said that nominations for ombud should be made by a public participation process. Thereafter, the Health Standards Board and the Minister must reach mutual agreement on the person to be appointed, as the ombud would be accountable to the CEO and the board. Salda said that with regards to independence, the ombud can only make recommendations, not a ruling, which is binding on the minister. And they highlighted that issues could arise here. Mr. Mbara noted that accessibility and relevance of the ombud to society must be taken into account. He further recommended that experience, occupational ethics, and reputational check must be conducted when appointing an ombud. And he raised the question of how will complaints from the public be dealt with. Ms. Kiewicz was a participant. She noted with concern the issue of the ombud, and she cited an example of the Western Cape, where an ombud was appointed without the necessary norms and standards and terms of reference, and that no difference was seen, and that anger in the community still exists. So she could raise the question of what difference will the ombuds really make on maternal and infant mortality. Finally, on clause 89, the offences and penalties. The issue was raised by a committee member on whether the penalties were stiff, but could not be reversed, you could not reverse lives lost. Salda responded that 10 million rand would be very high. It should be a structured process. Sanction and penalty should be aligned with the offence. Also, it depends on the interpretation of the CEO, who is going to be fined. Is it the CEO of the health establishment or the person, a doctor, who committed the offence? So that was an issue that was raised.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I think basically this is the synopsis of what happened on that day. These are the highlights. In fact, it's something that we have gone through, but indirectly. And the department has actually responded to some of the things, trying to tell us this is why it's like this. Basically, as we all understand, that the bill belongs to us as the committee. And now it's up to us to change certain things in the bill so that they can suit our community, so that our communities will have trust in what we are actually doing and what we're doing in future. So members, that is the presentation from Zubair. Though you have not read it, but he has tried to tell you what actually happened, which clauses are contentious as far as the communities are concerned. As I said, that the department has tried to highlight some of the things and explain why things are like that. But I'm sure there are going to be some clarities that you need from Zubair. I think this next hour we can deal with those clarities and look at how we can change it. Probably tomorrow, some of the things I can see that. Okay, members? Still digesting it. Even the department, by the way, you feel free, department, on this presentation by the researcher, if there are some things that you want to comment, that you think they have not been explained thoroughly, you create a relationship. Because our job is to look at this bill and see if there are any other new additions or changes that we're going to do. But before we go to that, we need to thoroughly scrutinize all the things that are here. I see you, Honorable Dudley. I see you, Honorable Dudley. Okay, Honorable Dudley.
Thank you. I see a couple of references to the Public Finance Management Act. I was wondering whether when we discussed that, whether we could have the relevant wording.
Chairperson, I stand to be corrected. This document that the researcher has just presented to us, to me, I don't think the questions must be directed to him. They can be directed to this side of the house. Because he is just highlighting what other people have said, which he doesn't know why they said it. But as you said, I think if the DG or the department has got answers for these highlighted issues, they might clarify us, because they were posed to us, they were, you know, he just summarized them for us. But that's the way that we can do it.
No, we can't shoot the messenger.
Yeah.
The messenger is just telling us what people said. It's only that the department has tried to level certain things, but I think about the PFMA, the correlation between PFMA, I think it needs to be, and that needs to be outside. I think it's that when you say the people on the other side, you're not meaning Honorable Dudley. she's not part of the... Okay, coming again.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just to answer Andy's question, on page 13 of the bill, under clause 7, amendment of laws, it specifically mentions that it amends part A of schedule 3 of the PFMA. So according to the bill, it is a schedule 3 entity. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I'm quoting from publication, which I really struggled to find, because I needed to understand how they establish public entities, how the National Treasury does it, and this I got by way of an email from someone who knew something about public entities. It is the interim guide for creating public entities at the national sphere of government, and it's issued by the Department of Public Service and Administration and National Treasury. It's a 2002 guide. And there's three categories of public entities, which are major public entities, which are Schedule 2 of the PFMA, national public entities, which are Schedule 3A, and national government business enterprises, which are Schedule 3B. So in terms of the fears or the comments made at the public hearing, the bill does provide for a classification of the Office of the Health Family Compliance as a Schedule 3 entity, and then to be inserted under Part A.
Can you go further and tell us what the Schedule 3 is, Schedule 2?
In terms of the guide, it's just it's a major public entity. It doesn't describe precisely how big or what a major public entity is, but I would assume it would be something like ESCOM or one of the major entities. And then the second one was Schedule 3A, which are national public entities. Those are mostly museums. If you check the clause number 7 of the bill, it includes the National the Nelson Mandela Museum. It's museums like the Ezekiel Museum around the corner, those sort of entities. And then the last one, which is Schedule 3B, which is National Government Business Enterprises, which are the smaller entities. So those are the three classifications. The very big one, just state-owned enterprises. The national public entities then, which would be something similar to museums, which would then where the Office of Health Service Compliance is put in, according to the bill, and then the national government business enterprises, which is a much smaller one.
Thanks very much. I think that was trying to clear what Honorable Dudley was asking. I'm not sure whether Department, you want to respond to some of the things that you think you didn't do good work in responding to them before we give over to the survey. Not as a
thank you, Chair. Some of the points that have been raised you already referred to, and perhaps what you could say, particularly with regard to independence, autonomy, neutrality, transparency, I mean, it's probably how the wording is provided for. And then you can ask the lawyer on how that can be improved if they could deal with the problem. The public entity and the state restricted state has a chair, the I think treasury unit, Mr. Gula, does have a guidelines as Gary mentioned. It categorizes different entities, whether they're statutory in nature, whether they're meaning they're well categorized. And I think if you can get that guidance, that they also have a nice PowerPoint that you can refer to, which may be very useful resource material for us. You can just ask them to share that with us, and perhaps it can help with how you structure the board. The point about the ombuds being separate from the Office of Health Standards and Compliance, when we discussed with the minister, his view was that he didn't necessarily have a problem. And I just want to give a background to the current processes. We have a on monthly basis we get over almost between 70 and 100 complaints from members of the public. And these are sent directly to me through email or written letters. The minister also gets complaints directly. Sometimes we get SMSs, which obviously we do not print. And then we also have a hotline where the public, members of the public send their complaints and so on. And we've done an analysis of some of the complaints. They differ anything from people who complain about how they were treated in facilities to those who have been harmed. And we've structured those, and we have a report at least that affects about 5 provinces, isn't it? No, it's all provinces. So it's quite insightful for us because it gives us a sense of how one would respond under those circumstances, particularly based on practical experience of a complaint system where members of the public. Now, we also recognize that just writing provinces to raise the complaints, what we've seen over the months and years is that when we've received such complaints and we write provinces, sometimes you don't get a response. If you do get a response, it's just an acknowledgement to say thank you, we received your response. And what it does is that it becomes problematic because we have to feedback to the public, to say to them what is it that we did with regard to the complaints that they face. So we think that perhaps maybe you need the ombudsperson could perform this function and establish a proper complaint management system, but where in the absence of a response or action or corrective measure, there must be some way by which the public can get answers, and we think this is an opportunity. Now the point that is raised is whether the ombudsperson should be independent, and who should nominate, should it form part of the office or should it be a separate body. I think it's probably a policy decision that has to be taken. But the principle, I think the minister supports greatly from what we've seen, because we did that analysis. And some people have been aggrieved, and there's no recourse, there's no mechanism, and they rely on us to respond. And we probably need a much more robust system that can provide protection for them. The publication of standards, I think it's a fair process where you publish standards. People must know what standards apply. But we probably need two separate processes, advocacy and information to the public so that they know what standards apply, but also
for health professionals who must implement those standards. So we need two processes. It's not just for the public, but also for the health professionals and the, not just for the users and those and the administrators, because they have certain obligations. And we harmonization definitely there should be, and this is what you said earlier, with the processes that we've addressed. The publication of the reports and what should be made public. If it's information that, because from this analysis that we've just done, it's quite clear that it's not information that we could put in the public domain, because it's about individual patients' information, for instance. But there's certain type of information that we can make available. But the principle may be that Parliament may want to consider is whether you want to name and shame, or do you want to make information just publicly available? Then the question is, for what purpose? So there must be an objective why we want to make it available, and also, if once you make it available, we must also communicate back when corrective action has been taken, because it's not enough to say these things are bad. But we then say what has been done to correct back then. Yes, this is about enough, but I think the lawyers are most able to explain these little issues that have been taken.
The law has become a very important commodity, especially that the department is being sued left, right, and center. I think that you, even the members here sitting here, they always get a lot of complaints from the provinces. And in fact, unfortunately, as you have alluded to, we never get responses from the provinces. And sometimes it becomes difficult to hammer you with those because you are not there. We actually write letters to the provinces, but you never get responses as to what happened. But the interesting one was the one I saw cutting edge last week. Thursday, I went there, and they were talking. In fact, when I opened TV, I was talking about recent case about a particular patient that says she was mishandled in the hospital, and the MEC was promised that he was going to go and see the patient, and the MEC never went there, and when they phoned him, he was cutting off the phone time and again. We don't know whether that's true or not true, but it's something that was actually mentioned on cutting edge. It was a long process talking about what actually happened. And that was occurring after there was a comment about the doctor not being paid in the same case. And I'm told now there's another one which came with Mamu Kenya, that the nursing, what is the nursing changes when nurses come in and the others leave, has been totally mismanaged by the CTG in the same case. So those are some of the things that are coming. But I'm just mentioning this, that we always get this complaint, but sometimes you don't want to take that to you. Well, obviously, what we're trying to do here is something that is going to be addressing those, and one hopes that it's going to concentrate on those things that are happening in the province, and it's going to help us to be able to interpret what happens in the province. I see some members want to go on and questions of clarity. Okay, Mackay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a question of clarity on the issue of imposing on to be separate office. My question is that, as it is said that the only is going to be 10 years on a 5-year basis. Now, if this office is separate, who's going to take over if there's nobody else who's monitoring the process? Because after 5 years, he or she will go. What will happen next? Let's, for example, that they maybe the complaint now took too long, and now she is not there now by that time, and nobody cares. Is going to answer if we say the minister and the CEO must be away from the ombuds. So I'm concerned about that monitoring process in that ombuds being having this function of being alone, with nobody to monitor and nobody to check what happens after 5 years. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm sure you could respond to that. that one. I know we're still waiting for the legal people to probably come, the state law advisors to come. But this is very important because the bill is ours now. But we just want to make sure when we finalize it, we understand what we are doing and we have given a clear discussion. Thank you.
Yes,
Chair,
this is why we're trying to find a mechanism by which we're suggesting, even though the ombuds is part of the office, but the ombuds person does not report to the CEO, but rather to the minister within the structure. That was our proposal. With a complete management system, what we are trying to establish now with this report is whether they can be a trigger for inspection, meaning you don't just inspect because you want to check whether facilities comply, but you also use those complaints as a basis of conducting inspection for continuous compliance. But that is different from what the ombudsperson will do, because the ombudsperson will then get to the root of the problem, and then if, for instance, inspectors are not doing their work and there are omissions on their part, you still have another mechanism. Because inspectors on their own, we see that not as a complete and full process. Mm-hmm. We still want sort of an oversight body. That was the proposal. But this person, the other person, must report to the minister. I mean, the appointment should be made on time. Yes. We're trying to avoid the ombuds person being appointed by the board. To rather be appointed by the minister. This is the proposal. I don't know. I think the lawyers would know, because they've looked at other ombuds persons. They probably know better. They could answer. I'm just giving a logical answer, but maybe they can provide a legal answer.
Maybe you can wait for the other question when they say coming with the ombuds and the other question.
Chairperson, this is not a question around the ombuds, but it's about the ombuds. For any organization which has got people that are appointed, usually before the end of their term, an advert is made so that people can come forward with the nominations. By the time that individual leaves, there are people to replace. And whilst on the podium, I've also said that they should report to Parliament directly. Indeed, all structures report to Parliament via the annual report.
Okay, I'm just laughing because there's something in the media that talks about the head of department. Is it DTI or compensation commissioner? Somebody who, there was an advert before the term ends in August, and that was taken to court, and the court has said, no, you should not have advertised before. I'm just trying to think about what you are saying, that there will be an advert before that.
No.
In fact, interestingly, this person won the case. Apparently, they should not have advertised it before she is told that before the term ends. You know the lady that I'm talking about. Oh, okay, it's going to be Honorable Grace, Honorable Sekhale, and Honorable Grace, and then you can come.
Chairperson, my appeal is that when the lawyers explain, I'm not afraid to say I'm a slow learner, but when you teach me, I understand what you are saying. Half of the people I think will understand the correct way. I want to understand clearly the ombudsman, the structure around him, and the filter to so many hospitals down there as to how are we going to operate. Because when I told the ombudsman who goes to the commercial or whatever, it's a direct, it's a person to an ombudsman to the finish shop that is private. But now we are talking of a government structure whereby 90% of our hospitals have got problems. Now, is it a long-term solution, or it starts from now up until whoever dies or whoever leaves or whoever is born? Because to me at this stage, it doesn't make a lot of sense. I like it, I want it, but I want to understand what is it that we are going to achieve and how I'm going to achieve it. Because for us just to come with a structure that is not going to help us with anything, it's going to be a fatal exercise for me. So I just want to understand how do you see it happening.
When they started understanding it, they never regretted. Probably that's why he led ANC for so many years. It's because he wanted to understand from Mutsusul what was it. And when he understood it, he never went back. That's how Pondos are. I'm sorry that I'm not a Pondo. Maybe more than this is a Pondo. So I'm saying everything is going to be explained to you. Some people have been whispering that we must stop using the word ombudsman. We must say ombudsperson. Because it could be a female. And so we must be gender sensitive and actually use that. Okay, Mr. Khan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sitting here, something which bothers me is it has been said and it's been known that in South Africa we come up with good legislative framework, but the problem is implementation and monitoring and evaluation. That's my problem. Because at the end of the day, since the inception of new era, the new South Africa, lot of good things have came up. And even when I'm sitting here with the background and heavy, I see this thing going to be a very good thing. But like the people are having with lot of things, even with the NHI, to be saying that if there is no 1-2-3, how is this going to really be implemented? If we cannot manage what we are having now, how do we really think this is going to happen? I'm saying this, Chairperson, because like we want to give it all at the end of the day. We want to be sitting here when we look back after our term, we should be proud to be saying that I was part of the team which came up with this thing. From the department, I need a reassurance, really. Number one, you find that there is a lot of complaints, as the DG has said, but those complaints are just a little bit. Why am I saying that? Is because people don't like know. Maybe I'm jumping the gun because we haven't dealt with whatever. But at the end of the day, if it is at the back of my mind, it's really bothering me to be saying, Chairperson is always saying, and we know that we are in the stage where by our health doesn't really, the health department doesn't really do what is expected to do. I haven't seen, maybe I have been trying to peruse, maybe you'll help me, because when we go maybe in detail, whereby we're coming up with the last part, the report, the monitoring and evaluation. Maybe it will be explained when we go this study. I don't know, but I want to put it forward to be saying
I'm having this thing in my life. I'm trying not to be negative, but because of the history, do you know, apartheid has really dealt with our mind. We always think of the negative. Can you say, is it there? And if it is not there, how can we put it in? So that we must come up with a strong monitoring and evaluation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think you have said a mouthful. I'm not sure whether it should be leave it to the department to answer that question, or it's a question that we all need to answer. Mm-hmm. We all need to look at, because it's really true that there are serious problems. I always equate what, since the new government came in 1994, I always equate it like fixing a moving bus.
Mm-hmm.
You can't stop it and say, I want to fix it.
Mm.
It has to move, but you fix it and it is moving.
Mm.
Sometimes you don't have time to monitor whether did I put that wheel properly, and until another one comes out. And then, so we're fixing a moving bus.
Yeah.
Mm. But are we doing the monitoring? I think your question is, do we monitor what we're doing? Are we getting there? Probably you can answer if you want to answer to that, but I think that's something that needs to come to all of us, because we're putting in a very good law which needs to be executed, and it's a precursor to the national health insurance. But are we going to do well? Honourable Rose, in my home game.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted a quick follow-up to what the DG said. I just wanted to check, did I hear correctly that you said you thought that the minister should appoint the ombud rather than the board? And then if that was the case, can you just tell me why? I don't know whether I missed the connection. But I also really want to support my colleague on what she said previously. We've got to make sure that this thing works well. So, thank you.
Okay.
Chair, just a few points, and I'd like to say the memo, but indeed we're doing a subject respect to the fact that because we're assuming that the parliament will decide whether it's five term office or whether 7 years. Precisely, this is why we're not going to start suggesting that it's the timeline. But we need continuity, and our view is that we should probably look at the ombuds person as an office, not necessarily an individual. Because if we look at an ombuds person as an individual and we don't look at an office, then I think it will be a problem, because it's probably that office, that whole activity that is important. The point about a complaint management system, I was illustrating this because we are getting these complaints. The minister is getting complaints, I'm getting complaints, you are getting complaints, but it's a mechanism of how these complaints are processed and what happens after they've been received. And I think that's the principle we're trying to sort of communicate with regard to this complaint management system. At the moment, Dr. Carol Marshall is the one who's supposed to deal with the complaints. We also deal with all the complaints that come through the presidential hotline. I'm just saying it's sort of multiple processes where complaints are raised. Some complaints come through the Chapter 9 institutions, the Public Protector, Public Service Commission, Human Rights Commission. So there are multiple entry points. So what we are saying is that we need a central place where this can be processed, but action can be taken. Meaning, at the moment, administratively, we can't do it internally. And this is what I was trying to articulate. But we do not see a problem with the minister appointing the ombudsperson, but who will also have power vested in law, for instance. We can say what the powers of the ombudsperson should be in law. Our
our problem with the board, for instance, appointing the ombudsperson, in the event that the board itself does not do certain things,
mm-hmm.
then there's a problem. For instance, let me use an example. We expect that there should be inspections and the inspectors must submit reports and there must be action. Now in the event that does not happen, at least there must be another mechanism that can be relied on. And I see a potential conflict where a board is responsible. And if indeed a board can also be involved in the appointment of the CEO, for instance, in consultation with the minister, which is a sort of a standard
mm-hmm.
practice with other processes. We don't see that dual role also, because then the board has to have oversight over the activity of the CEO through a proper governance arrangement. So we see that the problem with that, but I guess the lawyers can in their understanding in legal terms of the conversation. I'm
mm-hmm.
just sharing this experience of this complaint management system that we have that is not so functional.
Mm-hmm.
But that can be improved through this office. And maybe Dr. Mashia can do more with yourself.
Thanks very much. We have done a lot of homework on how complaints are managed. And I think the very first point is that complaints should always be best handled at the level at which they occur. So in fact, in the National Health Act, there is Section 15, which gives this responsibility to health facilities, to provinces, to actually investigate complaints and handle them and respond to complaints. And the proposal doesn't take away that responsibility. However, any system in the world, there are always situations where the complainant feels unhappy. And that may be because they don't trust that level, they've tried, they haven't even bothered to try, or because they really feel outraged. So there always has to be a possibility of escalation that the complainant chooses. So it's the patient who has to choose that I want to go higher because for whatever reason. Where we sit and see all of these complaints, it's obvious that the bulk of them are basically about how health systems function. The bulk of the complaints are, I don't want to say they're minor because to the complainant they're not minor, but the bulk of the complaints are to say that the clinic was dirty, there were long queues at the hospital, the nurse was rude to me, I went to the CEO and he didn't answer. And a lot of the complaints are actually because they felt that nobody listened to them. So they went through the proper processes and they say, I've been waiting 3 months, nobody ever answered me. There are, though, as the DG said, a few where the situation is obviously serious. And what we've been trying to do is to apply a sort of a risk classification to those complaints and to say what's the potential for harm in terms of what the complainant said. There is a small group of complaints where it appears that the problem is actually the patient, because there are problem patients. There are patients who didn't quite understand or who have it in for the nurse. So it's not that the patient is always right, although that's what we should need to start assuming that the patient is right. What I'm trying to say is that I think that the information that comes from complaints is really an important way of knowing from the users on the ground what is going right or wrong. But not every single complaint would need to be fully investigated. Because if you want to know why the queues were long, it's probably more appropriate to understand how the clinic is functioning rather than to have a full-scale legal investigation that goes and says it was your fault and it was his fault. So not all complaints are the same. When complaints are really, really serious, I think it's fundamental that there's somebody who can go and actually determine not just whose fault it is, but also what should be done for the patient. And I think that's really what an ombud does. So I don't think we should equate complaints, general complaints, of which there must be thousands, with the role of an ombud, which is a very, very high level, directed at redress and determination of what should be done for the patient. Mm. And I think that might be one of the reasons that led to the proposal that it would make sense if the Ombud could draw on the services of an inspectorate for the many, many, many complaints that actually don't deserve or don't require or it wouldn't be appropriate to investigate in depth. But for those few that would require to be investigated, a routine inspection isn't the correct route.
Mm.
So I don't know if that's helpful, okay, in terms of how we are experiencing at this moment the management of complaints. So fundamental really tells you about the performance of the health system as the public experiences, but often it's not the DG or the person, it's not the person with the infection hanging out. It's probably a few of them. I don't know if that's helpful.
Could I just have a point of clarity on that answer?
Well,
okay. Thank you. I think you have answered that well, and I'm quite happy. And then I just want to check that the inspectorate you refer to, that would be part of the office of the Ombud. And there, in that, you would have some kind of continuity as well. But not really. But my original question was actually about the appointment of the Ombud by the board, as opposed to something that what I was going to suggest is something like the appointment by Parliament itself. Is this not something one could consider, so that there's not such a direct link between the Ombud and the Minister? Because I think this is what people have spoken about quite often in wanting independence, that the person is going to be able to do what he thinks is right and not necessarily by direction.
Okay.
she was just correcting something to me, saying in the UK the Ombuds is appointed by the Queen, so we don't have a Queen.
But we have the parliamentarians, aren't we good enough?
Okay, maybe the lawyers can read what's
there. Some of the issues that were responded quite well by the DG and Dr. Marshall then. So the issue of the appointment, for instance, with regard to the ombudsman, if you look, it's only the Chapter 9 institution where Parliament, for instance, normally gets directly involved and appoints those bodies, such as, for instance, the public protector, because they are specifically provided for in the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go, for instance, just now, the National Assembly completed the military, for instance, ombudsman, which still is appointed by the minister.
Mm-hmm.
You have seen appointed the minister, Mr. Matanzima, just now, been appointed by the minister to handle complaints related to the military.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, because we all have bank accounts and all those things, you will recall there's an ombudsman for financial services.
Mm-hmm.
That's appointed by the minister of finance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not appointed by Parliament, it's appointed by the minister of finance. And if you look at that in such a decision, you've got the Financial Services Board, which is the DG1, which is basically the discussion that related to finance, for instance, all of that. And then under that board, you will have, for instance, the Office of the Executive Director, you know, that deals with the day-to-day, just as the CEO will be dealing with the day-to-day administration. And then now the department is amenable to the board. He does work that person that will be dealing with the daily administration issue and all of that. And then there is still under that financial support, you have the ombudsperson, which is now the complaints that are related to if you receive oneself bad advice or anything, which investigate those complaints and all of those things. Some people might also have said the financial system will advise you to board your house if you have finished paying your house and you end up losing all your savings in your house, and then that person will come and that person will be there to it. Mm-hmm. You know, at the end of the day, it's the office that will deal with those issues. So that is the issue that I'm trying to bring the members. It's the minister is the suitable person to appoint that team. And the DG has explained, because that is why they are taking it from the board, that appointment from the board. They are taking away from the board, so that's not a word, because that person will also investigate the settlement of the office of the of all of that, which is the responsibility of the board at the end of the day of the board to hand over that for that office and all of that. So that is why we take it and put it under the minister. The issue of the independence for the school members to finish this part. Because in the beginning you say it is part of the office and all of that. But one thing that I want to say to members, there was an opinion for ourselves that is awaited for ourselves from Gabriel, which will deal with that issue of the independence and everything else. You will have that opinion for them today. If I were to ask for the audience of the members, after they have seen how Gabriel is articulated, the members reflect on what, because of the chairperson is saying, it is the committee's bill, no longer the department. And the committee, of course, it will deal with this bill, the way that it is fit, relying, of course, most from the legal opinion that the members receive. One of those will be the one that they said they will supply to members. And the members, after they presented that, they will say, okay, we want this autonomous one to be done in this particular fashion and all of that. For example, one of the issues, if I may tie with what the chairperson has said, one of the problems that the national, what do you call it, National Consumer Commission, was complaining about was the fact that some of the budget, of his own budget, her own budget, was being held over by the DG of the of DPI. So he was putting limits on her so how to operate because of the non-availability of funds, because she was, if the DG was keeping all those funds, because the funds were directed from the DG. She was not getting her own budget and all of this, and they were being directed to transfer for instance, the office of the DG of the DTI. So it's one of the issues we were looking for. If now we say in the budget of the office for instance would be the budget of the office as a whole, but then you may say maybe it's the budget that would operate to be appropriated by Parliament separately from the budget of the office. Or is the budget that the office must within a certain time frame transfer that money, you know, so that if the chief executive officer of the office doesn't transfer the ombuds budget, then he is then breaking the law because within a certain period of time he must transfer. This is what happens between the DG of the CTI and the National Consumer thing. And the other thing with the National Consumer Commissioner is that it was the issue of renewal. She expected, she has an expectation that the contract will be renewed. And say, it's a 7 or 5 year period, 9 renewal. Mm-hmm. So that thing that raised there, it isn't coming in here, it's not coming in because here there's no issue about renewal. Because this person said a particular term, it's either 5 years, which members will agree with the 5 years or the 7 years. And then after the person is finished, he moves on and another person will come. And obviously, before that period, as it happened, Chairperson, before that period, you will see, he will see, or she will see the advent on the paper because, you know, his contract is not going to renew because the law is saying the land is not renewed. He won't run to court and say, I expected something because it's a land renewal. So he won't go to court because he knows that it's there for a specific period. After that, he must move on, something will come up. Of course, the department will be advertising that thing before that time, either 5 months or 3 months down the line, but there will be an average why that person is there. So that when that person terms finishes on a particular month, if it is June, there's a certain person has already been appointed to take over from July onwards. So those are the issues. So these are the things that members can decide, especially around it. If the regular members upon the autonomy of the past, the independence, if it's the issue of the budget, either you say the money must be transferred so that the independence of the office, you know, the expectation, the perception that the president was talking about, that the perception that the ombudsman won't be asked to fulfill his function by the chief executive officer on finance, because really you will see it's now more powerful than what she was, more powerful than what she was, more powerful than what she we always find a way to affect another person if you can't find that thing. So those are the things that can be built in the field and all of members to repair after photosynthesis that it receives in the first document. And I know that it's still not saying that it's still not final, and there's a preliminary opinion. And after that, the members will say, okay, we want this particular clause to be changed. We want this particular clause. So that we also to Jefferson, don't do it piecemeal. For instance, I know what they will say, we can prepare amendments, but I don't think members have dealt with all those issues that needs to be covered. Members must just so that we don't do piecemeal, because if you do, we do piecemeal something, at the end of the day, we end up with a product that is completing and all of that. The other members to give us clear instruction after they have reflected on everything and the documents that members are waiting for, and then say, we want this particular clause to be changed. We want the structure in the form of the ombudsman to be independent in this particular position that I explained to them. Then we will do it. And so then we will come with a list of amendments. We call it an A bill or a need. And then that is the instruction how the B bill will be looked like. I think.
Thanks for that. Okay, let's give all the lawyer.
Jefferson, I agree with that. It needs better advisor. That might be a better approach. And that instead of I'm still unclear as to which specific amendment the committee wants. So it's better that the committee has all the information before we decide on the amendment, just so that we don't have a situation where amendments that affect specific portions of the principle act or the amendment law in conflict with other amendments.
With the 5 minutes that left, yeah, the last and another group.
Thank you, Chairperson. House, don't take this question otherwise. I'm just going to make myself clear. Is that when the term of 5 years of 7 years, when you publish the application, can he or she apply again?
That's a big concern to that.
My question is, legally, if you specify a term and a certain phrase, a certain condition of whatever he or she can apply for, do we fall into a category of insured that they said 10 years or 5 years? But now they are terminating my services before.
I suspect this question that I feel. Thank you,
it specifies in the bill that the ombud is appointed by the minister, but then the minister can terminate the employment of the ombudsman council for serious misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence after affording that person a reasonable opportunity to apply to make representation. So it's not just you're fired, it's a discussion. And then it says that the section goes further to say applicable legislation. I assume that would be the relevant labor legislation. So it's not just that the person is fired, but there is a reasonable opportunity to apply. And once that person is fired, I don't think that the intention is not for the person to come back again. So a new ombud would then have to be appointed. Because there's a transitional arrangement where the minister can then appoint the person to stand in for a specific amount of time while a permanent ombud is then reappointed.
I suppose it doesn't mean that there can't be legal issues that might come. Despite the fact that it has been mentioned what things would actually make that person to leave before the term. But you find people who still complain and take the job. That's why we're going to look at this bill and make sure that it covers those things. Okay, Manali?
No, I'm sure he explained it to very, very, very well. Because even there, to just show that the act is built in mentality to ensure that it's not easy to get rid of it. That is why it specifies the circumstances under which the ombudsman, and it is how can I put it? It is a standard in every all of these institutions such as this that you can only remove the such a person under these circumstances, under these circumstances. Under that, you can't do any other thing. And the real said that applicable labor law legislation, those notice periods and everything, giving the other, you know, the rules of justice, giving the other person the right to hear that person, the fact that you can't, the minister, sit here and say, okay, I'm the chairperson of the discussion, and you can't be the judge in your own case, and all those things that we filter in and just explain in the legislation. Regarding to the other question, he can apply, she or she can apply when his time is finished, when the advert is put there, because if you apply and then you appoint him, then you are renewing his period, whereas the legislation is in the number. So he will know, she will know, he will know that he must leave us after the he might be very good, but you know, all of them, and after 7 years he must just leave, and the other person must tell you. The thing is that with this kind of offices, you don't want to create a fiefdom for individuals. That's a person who might be in long good rules, because that's the idea that you shouldn't those things.
I thought that was the last question. Okay, is that a short
question? Is that one to clarify if I feel, I think if I feel it's okay, because to have a person for 7 years and just to create CEO can be corrupt. I said it's okay, let's not forget about the 7 years.
I'm not sure what are you trying to say about some other countries in Africa where there are presidents for that. Where you can't challenge it. I'm not going to go into that. Remember, that those were the answers to some of the questions. As I said, to give this hour, but we needed to discuss some of the things so that when we change 70 years, we are going to be knowledgeable as to what's happening. I know, you know, we are in a very difficult situation because we are only 18 years in democracy, and being 18 years in this democracy of ours, we got it when certain things did not happen or certain people delivered this off. And this is what is coming back to haunt us.
Mm-hmm.
Like the primary health care, it was not something that was frankly, clearly with the African folk in South Africa. As a result, when you look at this thing, it's all about us knowing about the health issues as communities. Now, it's going to be very difficult, and we can't take some of the developing countries and think that it's going to be sitting with us. There are a lot of times, over and above that, I think still more than 70% of our people, not understanding the primary health care, we still attend traditional healers, and which makes us more confused as to which direction do we go. And some of those things are going to be haunting us with this thing. All I'm trying to say is that let's look at this bill and let's commend the department for coming up with something of this nature that I want to better what is happening. And let's try and work on it. And I think we still have got a leeway of amending it, even if when we see that things are not happening well, we can amend it. But that is going to go to what Honorable Nguesi Sekgalet was saying, that how are we going to monitor this? That's why I was saying that question does not belong to the department. It belongs to all of us. Because we are an oversight committee. We're supposed to be oversighting, and that way we're supposed to be with us. And in fact, even making people understand what primary health care is all about, it's not only the job of the department, but it's the job of us to make sure that people understand what is going on. So with that, we are going to take on this thing. So we'll be meeting tomorrow. I think it's at 9:30, committee room 2, so we'll be there at 9 plain, and hopefully we'll be having some documents from our legal group to tell us what is going on. And we'll go on until very late tomorrow, and the transport will be organized for those who don't have transport. I know Grace Look, this was asking this question. Monavi says, Gary. You know why she's saying that she wants to understand very clearly?
Yeah.
It's because she's got a daughter who's a lawyer. And she'll come back to you and haunt you because she's got a legal person. Don't listen to what she says, that she does not understand. She's got a daughter who's a legal person. But I think Grace said, on a lighter note, now I'm sure you've chosen who you're going out with today. We'll assist you in getting that person to go and pay whatever that person is. That one wasn't the reason that unfortunately, DG and Dr. Commercial, they feature nowhere. It's the other people that are featuring, so you don't expect any invitations, DG.
But I have chosen you already.
No, I'm tired of DG and the girl. Okay, thank you very much. The evening is over. We'll meet tomorrow.
Thank you.
you're going to say this,
I'm going to go to the hospital.